Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. This is Wednesday, May 15th, and you're listening to The Morning Show. We're live here in the studios, downtown Sandpoint, and I'm Susie Prez, one of your hosts.
And I'm Chris Bessler, your co-host over here. Susie, how are you this morning?
Nice to see you, Chris. I'm great. It's beautiful, and all is well. It's the Wednesday after Mother's Day, and it was a wonderful Mother's Day.
It was. Beautiful weather. Hope all the mothers out there had a great day.
Yeah.
And we have a great show today. We have a guest in the studio right now from Bonner General Health. We have Allie Impsch. Hi, Allie. Thank you for coming in.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And Robin Hansen.
Thanks, Chris and Susie. We appreciate being here today.
And we're going to be talking about National Stroke Awareness Month and a cool new big machine that the hospital now has, and maybe some other things. And then the second half of the show, we're going to be down near the bottom of the hour, about 8:30, we're going to be talking with a couple of folks from the West Bonner County School District about their upcoming supplemental levy that's going to be on the ballot this coming Tuesday.
On May 21st.
On May 21st. Mm-hmm. This is coming Tuesday.
We're looking at the calendar, actually, as we speak. And we have a lot going on, but I wonder if we should hear about the weather first.
Yes, the weather.
Okay, from the National Weather Service, we have currently 46 degrees. Today we can expect partly sunny with a high of 72 and light winds becoming calm. Tonight, showers mainly after 11 p.m., low around 51. And then it looks like showers all through the weekend, but 80 to 90 to 50, and then Saturday night 20% and Sunday 20% showers. The highs are around 54 and the lows go down to 45. So it's basically spring weather.
Spring weather, that rainy weather. Actually, we kind of need some rain. The forests are already dry. There's other things going on outside. The full moon is Saturday. And if you look up in the sky on Monday and Tuesday, you'll see Jupiter hovering near the moon. Jupiter's pretty bright right now. And I want to mention, if we get a little clearing tonight into tomorrow, there's about a 75% chance of northern lights.
Because that's exciting.
There's a geomagnetic storm that has released a bunch of stuff headed our way that creates the northern lights, the aurora. So if you get out late tonight and there is a break in the clouds, look up.
So is it best to go, where do you go to see the northern lights? I always think you have to look north.
Yes.
So you have to get, is that where they live?
North? So find a vantage point that looks north.
Climb up Gold Hill, right?
Yeah, Gold Hill actually would have great views. A couple other things outside. The lake level is coming up. It's come up 1.02 feet the last 7 days. It's now at 2057. Still has about 6 feet to go to full pool. The streams are flowing high right now. Moye River is at 29,000 CFS. It's actually about triple the stream flow it was just a couple weeks ago. So that's for whitewater rafters, that's a sign you better get out there. Priest River is up at 2680 CFS right now. And there's a lot going on around town.
There is. We have a couple of other things that we want to do. We have a new segment that we usually talk about on the morning show on Wednesday. It's called the Sandpoint City Minute, and here it is for this week. Jennifer Stapleton, the administrator at the city, sends this over to us. Thank you, Jennifer. Sergeant Chamberlain with Sandpoint Police will be putting on a TIPS class, T-I-P-S class. This class is free and open to anyone who serves or works in and around an establishment that sells an alcoholic beverage, including managers, bartenders, servers, and security personnel. It's Thursday, May 16th. That's tomorrow. At noon to 3 p.m., so 12 p.m. to 3 p.m., Sandpoint City Hall, Council Chambers at 1123 Lake Street. This class will focus on proven intervention techniques to help alcohol sellers, servers, manage associated risks, including how to spot minors, how to prevent sales to minors, state alcohol service law review, how to detect fake and altered IDs, prevention of overpouring, and overview of liabilities. Mm-hmm. So that is tomorrow at 12 p.m. at the City Hall. Mm-hmm. That's your Sandpoint City Minute.
About 90 seconds there. Susie.
It was a little more, I know.
I want to mention a couple other things. One is that there is going to be National Weather Service weather spotter training offered. This is actually tomorrow, May 16th, from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the East Bonner County Library. This is for volunteers. You can be a weather spotter. What the National Weather Service is looking for is real-time reports of severe weather. If you want more information about that, I suggest getting in touch with the library, the East Bonner County Library. You can call 265-2665, but that training is tonight. Just show up at the East Bonner County Library from 6 to 7:30 p.m. In the community room.
Sounds good.
Something else of civic importance we want to mention is there is an election coming up on Tuesday, and there are actually some important races that are occurring. This has really been flying under the radar. A lot of people don't know there is an election, but on Tuesday, May 21st, there's going to be an election for the Pondere Hospital District Board. There are two seats. There's one seat open there, and there are two candidates, as well as the East Bonner County Library Board, where there are three candidates for two open seats. So there are contested elections for both of those. There's also the West Bonner County School District election, and Bayview Water and Sewer District has an election. It depends on what part of the county you live in as to which of these districts you'll be voting for. But if you want more information about that, go to Sandpoint Online election page. SandpointElections.com will get you straight there. There's information on the different candidates, how and where to vote. And you can vote early until Friday at the Bonner County Elections Office on Highway 2 there. So do your civic duty, folks. Get educated on what these elections are about and get out and vote.
And at the end, at the bottom of the hour, we will have folks from the West Bonner County School District 83 in to talk about what that vote means. It's a levy vote. It's a re-vote on their levy.
Yes, and I'd say the election that's really getting a lot of interest right now as well as the Pondere Hospital District Board. And so get educated on that because your vote will make a difference there. And speaking of the hospital, actually, we should mention this week is Lost in the 50s. Of course, there's a ton of stuff going on for Lost in the 50s. It's the whole town's involved. If you want more information about that, go to our website, carefy.org, and click on the community calendars, get the whole rundown. But really, it kind of kicks off. There's some stuff Thursday. The Pray to Cars is on Friday at 6 p.m. through downtown. Then on Saturday, the whole town is turns into a big car show with about at least 300 cars typically that show up for that. So it's pretty fun if you're into old cars.
Okay.
And with that,
I think we should get to our interview. We have two smiling faces. We have Robin Hansen and Allie Imsch. Allie, you're the stroke coordinator for our Bonner General Health, and we could start there and find out there's some new ways to look at strokes and not only prevention, but early detection. What it means, does early detection matter? Why don't you just tell us what you know?
Why, thank you. That was a good lead. So May is Stroke Awareness Month, and with awareness, I just wanted to talk a little bit about what stroke is. So there's two different types of stroke. You can have an ischemic stroke, which is where a blood clot actually gets lodged into a part of your brain, and then the brain actually loses a blood supply. So that can cause signs and symptoms of a stroke. There's also a hemorrhagic stroke, which is from bleeding. There's a part in your brain that can actually bleed, and that can cause your stroke-like symptoms as well. 85% of strokes or 87% of strokes are usually ischemic. Some things you can do, you know, just know your risk factors for the ischemic strokes. High blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes. Those are really important things that you need to manage and discuss with your doctor. Hemorrhagic. Oh, go ahead.
I was just wondering, those three things you mentioned, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and diabetes, is that what they consider metabolic syndrome?
Those could be warning signs. Yeah, if you have metabolic syndrome, then that is something you need to talk to your doctor about, because that could predispose you to heart disease and also stroke. One of the new things I like, they really have focused a lot on heart attacks and to know the warning signs of that. And one of the new things that we're trying to tell people is that a heart attack and a brain attack very similar. You know, it's the same thing that happens to your heart that happens to your brain. So recognizing those signs and symptoms are really important. So some of the promotions actually say it is a brain attack.
So. Okay, and I know that we've had you in before, and you talked about ways to detect a stroke, and there was an acronym for that, FAST. Tell us a little bit more about that and any new thinking about how to detect strokes.
So FAST, it's an acronym. It stands for face, arms, speech, and time. The face, if you notice that you have any drooping to the face, numbness, tingling, arms, any weakness to the arms, speech would be you're having any difficulty with speech, either speaking and slurring or not able to understand. And then time is to get to the emergency room as soon as possible. They've incorporated two more parts of that called the BFAST, which is balance and eyes. And so if you notice either you or your loved one having any difficulty with balance, they're walking kind of off. And if their eyes, if they have a sudden loss of vision in one part of their eyes, or, you know, sometimes people's gaze can be fixed off to the side. That is a very important warning sign that it could be a stroke.
So do these things kind of come on just suddenly, right? I mean, it can be very sudden.
Right. And that is a huge difference between, you know, when people need to get to the emergency department is these signs and symptoms are sudden. A lot of times people will wait and they'll take a nap and then they come in and it's too late for certain types of interventions. So that is something, you know, really important that people know if you have these signs and symptoms, you have to go to the emergency room as quickly as possible.
And the information I read on this is the faster you get to the emergency room, the faster you get treatment, the more likely you have a more complete recovery.
Correct. So we're really lucky at Bonner General Hospital. We use Telestroke, which is a really neat technology that if you come in with a sign of a stroke, then you can actually be connected with a stroke neurologist. Our ED physicians are really good at, you know, recognizing the signs of stroke, and then we will activate a stroke team alert, and that gets the telestroke neurologist who can actually beam in and see you and recognize what signs and symptoms, you know, and if you do qualify for a certain type of medication, they are the ones that will help guide through the process.
Are the symptoms for a heart attack and stroke similar? And is the hospital staff and emergency pretty keyed into, no, this isn't a stroke, it's a heart attack, or vice versa?
That's a great question. Similar in the sense, they're two separate parts of the body. So similar for a heart attack would be, you know, you have that crushing chest pain, the left arm pain. For women, you know, it's you usually complain that you just don't feel right or you're having an indigestion, back pain, something like that. With a heart attack or with a stroke, you have different symptoms. You could have a sudden headache, loss of vision, like we kind of talked about, numbness, weakness on one side of the body, your gait is off, those kinds of things. So similar in the sense that something isn't right in your body, but different in the, you know, where it is in your body.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to just briefly go back over those signs, the face, arms, speech, and time. Time meaning get to the hospital right away. But what do you mean by face? What's going on with the face?
If you've ever seen somebody who's having a stroke, you can actually ask them to smile, and there's part of their face that is either droopy or it just doesn't go up the same. You can also say, show me your teeth, and they won't be able to get that part of their face up. Sometimes also recognizing somebody having those symptoms, but also in yourself, if you have any numbness, tingling, you know, we had somebody the other day that they went to take a drink of water and it, you know, kind of like when you go to the dentist, the water just fell out of their mouth and they're like, that's not normal.
And so this individual didn't really notice it until they say, hey, this is weird, and they kind of self-diagnosed at that point?
Well, they knew that there was something that wasn't right, so they came into the emergency department. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. that person hadn't been feeling well through the night and didn't come in until the morning.
Okay, so there you go. There's a warning that get in earlier and you'll have a more complete recovery, hopefully.
And that happens a lot. You know, we're pretty stoic as a society, and we think that, you know, it'll be okay if we take a nap.
Yeah, tough it out.
Yeah. Well, the truth is, a lot of times, odd little things happen. You get symptoms, and they do go away, mm-hmm. and it's nothing. But this person didn't feel good through the night. They just felt off. or nauseous or?
Just a little numbness and tingling. Oh, and
okay. Kind of in that signs.
Right.
And so the same thing with the arm. It feels tight. It feels numb.
Numbness, tingling. And a lot of times, too, I've had people come in that they felt okay, but then they went in to pick something up and they dropped it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sometimes they can be pretty subtle signs. And that's what I really like about the new promotion, too. It says it's okay to overreact to stroke, and promoting the families to say, I don't know what's wrong, but something isn't right. So it's okay to bring them in. You know, sometimes, a lot of times it's not a stroke, but it's good to know.
And how long does it take to get checked out if let's say it's middle of the night and you think you might be having a stroke and you come into the emergency room, how big of a procedure is it to get checked out?
When you come in with heart attack, stroke, something like that, it's actually a time-sensitive emergency. So our emergency department staff and physicians, they're really great at recognizing those time-sensitive emergencies, and they act really quickly. Sometimes, you know, it's a lot all of a sudden, and then things kind of taper down, and it's kind of a waiting process to see what it is. So those things, when you come in, it's an emergency.
Yeah, but so err on the side of caution.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to interject that Bonner General Health was awarded, the fastest time from door to CT. So maybe we can talk about that a little bit, that a CT scan is critical in diagnosing stroke.
Right. So especially when, if you do call 911 and EMS arrives at the scene and they see that you are having some signs and symptoms of stroke, then they let us know in the emergency department. We make sure that the CT scan, which is what we use to diagnose a stroke, we make sure that that is up and ready. What it is it takes a quick image of your brain, and then you go back to the emergency department. And it's really nice at the hospital we do that. We'll even bypass the emergency room and take you straight to CT. And, you know, the diagnosis, what we're looking for is to see if there's a bleed or no bleed. Because our course of treatment is different if you have the hemorrhagic stroke like we discussed or the ischemic stroke.
Is a hemorrhagic stroke related to a cerebral aneurysm?
Could be, yeah. Yeah.
Because that will happen with an aneurysm sometimes. You'll start bleeding in the brain.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And hemorrhagic strokes, if you have high blood pressure, you're more predisposed. Or if you have any sort of, there's some other things that are going on in your brain that could predispose you to hemorrhagic.
So folks that have high blood pressure or high cholesterol, they're more predisposed to a stroke. Are there other risk factors like gender or age?
That's a good question. And I have these written down here so I don't miss any. There are, you definitely have risk factors that are outside of your control, your age, your race, and your gender and family history. So those are things that, you know, there is a familiar history. So if your family has a history of strokes, it's really important to make sure you're managing that with your doctor. But things that are manageable, high blood pressure, if you have a diagnosis of atrial fibrillation, that's really important because what happens is little clots can build up in your heart. And then as your heart pumps, those clots could actually get dislodged into your brain. So if you have that, that's really important to manage with medication and your doctor. High cholesterol, like we discussed, smoking is huge. So if you're a smoker, it's really good to, you know, at least cut back as much as you can. Diabetes, poor circulation, lack of physical activity, and obesity are also manageable risk factors.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a little bit about the telestroke program. Can you give us some more detail on that?
Yeah, so at Bonner General, we are partnered with Sacred Heart. They will receive a huge amount of our patients that do receive the medication that is used to treat strokes. But we also partner with Providence Telestroke Network. So when you come in with stroke-like symptoms, like I said, we have the technology, which is a computer, and it beams in with a two-way camera. And the stroke neurologist on the other end, it's kind of like FaceTime. They can actually beam in and see the patient and talk with the family and talk with the ER staff and physician and decide the best course of treatment. It's a really neat technology. We're really lucky to have it here.
Mm-hmm. And it's a big time saver. I mean, that's something, too, that we really want to point out. As time is such a key factor, we get people in front of a neurologist in minutes instead of them driving to Spokane. So it really, we can't emphasize the time portion, you know, factor enough.
So the physician in at Sacred Heart can look at the results of the CT scan and anything else that they've done at, here at Bonner General, and consult and prescribe or whatever.
It's really neat. It's a parallel, a lot of parallel processes that all happen. You know, you come in and there's so much that's going on all at the same time. It's really neat to see when that happens, the team comes together.
Sounds like we have a great program here in Bonner County at the Bonner General Health. Mm-hmm. Well, that seems fortunate for a small community, but very important as our baby boomers get a little bit older, probably. Mm-hmm. And Robin.
Yes.
You had some things you wanted to talk about.
Yeah,
we have
some
new equipment.
Yeah, we're so excited that we've just upgraded our MRI machine to the highest technology that's available. It was quite a process. If anybody noticed the trailer that was in our front parking lot for a while, we had a temporary MRI while we did some pretty big construction on the back end of our building. We had to remove a wall and get in a crane and take out the old magnet and bring in the new. And so we are up and running and doing scans, you know, currently taking appointments. This new machine kind of takes away a lot of the fear that people have had about getting an MRI. It's got the biggest tunnel, you know, for lack of, you know, better word, but the tunnel that the patient actually goes in, it's the roomiest available. So that has a decrease in that claustrophobic feel that a lot of people experience. And it's the quietest. So the noise has been reduced greatly. And I know that's another component that was maybe not so comfortable. It's the fastest. So that's a great advantage. So you're in and out quicker. It's roomier. It's quieter. And it has a memory foam on the table, so it's actually the most comfortable. And so we're just really excited that we've elevated that level of patient comfort for our patients, and are excited to be able to offer that technology right here in Sandpoint to our community. So it's close to home, and it's you know, the best experience for an MRI.
So what is the MRI used for? What kinds of conditions are they looking for when you get one of these pictures taken?
Well, that's the technical part. Maybe Allie can help with, you know, all different kinds of scans. A lot of people that are going through orthopedic surgery come in for an MRI. People can start with a CT scan for certain conditions, but then when the physician and the surgeons really need a closer, more detailed look, then they upgrade to an MRI scan. So cardiac scans, cancer, all kinds of things that are diagnosed with the MRI.
For the brain, our primary choice of treatment would be a CT scan. That's, you know, we look for bleed or no bleed. But it really does do a better job of brain imaging. You can really see if there is a clot or if there is a bleed. It's far more detailed to be able to see the exact spot. So patients that don't qualify for the course of treatment to get the blood clot medication, that's one thing. But then in order to be able to move forward, if you need to see the neurologist, to be able to have that MRI done sooner rather than later is great.
And this machine is pretty huge.
It is huge.
It takes a crane to move it around.
It does. It was quite the project, and we're just really excited. Even with the upgraded technology, we had to, you know, reconstruct the room that the control panels are in. But it's exciting. We're just so pleased to offer this technology and really provide, you know, the highest technology and diagnostic imaging in the area. So it's exciting.
Mm-hmm. I just want to remind our listeners, this is the morning show you're listening to on this Wednesday, May 15th. And we're here in the studio with Robin Hansen and Allie Imch from Bonner General Health, talking about strokes and a new MRI machine that's very exciting. I was just thinking as we're talking, Bonner General Health really offers a lot to our community that's not just emergency room or hospital stays or surgery. It's all encompassing for a small community. And what else can you tell us in the next bit of time about the whole big program that Bonner General offers? And do you collaborate, like you said, with Sacred Heart for the telestroke?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think something that people maybe not know is that we have over 10 outpatient clinics in serving our community. And the newest clinic that we have opened is our new ear, nose, and throat clinic, which that's also an exciting addition to the community because we haven't had a full-time ENT physician since 2012. We've had a physician come in to town about one day a week. And so the time frame to get an appointment was just out the door. So we're so excited to be able to offer that. Our physician is full-time right next to the hospital in the Pine Grove building, and she operates locally too. So that's really exciting. And that service is, you know, for all ages, newborns to elderly. So that's exciting. We are bringing on an ophthalmologist later in this year. So we're just, you know, the current services that we have are amazing, and to be able to expand and really offer these services close to home for our community is what our mission is.
Okay, go ahead, Chris.
And you've been at it a while?
I've been at it a while.
The hospital.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, because there's something coming up that we should mention.
It's very exciting that 2019 is Bonner General Health's 70th anniversary. Yeah. So what started as an infirmary building that was placed on the shores of Sand Creek in 1949 is now, you know, a hospital with a healthcare network of outpatient clinics that we just provide so many services. And I really encourage people in our community, any test, any procedure that your healthcare provider may prescribe or suggest, to really, you know, check out our website, bonnergeneral.org, because we most likely offer it right here.
And it's a neat history. You know, that first hospital you're talking about was actually a building that was barged up from Farragut, right?
Yes.
So we started as a little adjunct of, I don't know, World War II or something, right? Because Farragut was built for the naval station there. And there's little pieces of that history maybe that still comes down through the hospital. Yeah,
it's nice to have that that history in our town. And we really were looking at 2019 as, you know, we're 70 years strong. It's 70 years of providing healthcare to our community. And we just look back and we thank all of the physicians and staff and, you know, even the community that supported us throughout these 70 years.
It seems like as our community grows, we are completely supported in the medical field by Bonner General Health. So we're very fortunate. It gives us peace of mind. And we want to thank Allie Imch, stroke coordinator for Bonner General Health, and Robin Hansen, marketing specialist, Bonner General Health, for coming in and telling us about our wonderful healthcare system here. And is there going to be a celebration for the 70th anniversary?
There is. Thank you for asking. We are having a celebration on Saturday, July 13th. And it will be from noon to 3. We'll have some more details as we get closer to that event. But we're really looking forward to celebrating with the community.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for coming in, Robin. And
thank you.
Allie.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We have guests coming up. We have folks from the West Bonner County School District 83, Sandra Brower, board chair, and someone else. We'll find out in a moment. But we're going to take a little musical break here. This is Andy Williams, Happy Heart. We'll be right back. Stay with us. And that was Andy Williams, Happy Heart. And we're here in the studios for the morning show.
And we have with us now Jennifer Anselmo. She's the business manager with the West Bonner County School District 83. Jennifer, thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning.
And we might get Sandra Brower, the board chair, to join us in a little bit. She got held up. We want to jump into what is coming up with the May 21st supplemental levy request. This is in the West Bonner County School District. Can you describe the district boundary for our listeners?
Yeah, we have about we are a really large district, about 780 square feet. We run all the way south of Blanchard and north of Norman Lake, or Norman.
And so from Sandpoint, as you drive towards Priest River, where do you hit the boundary where West Bonner County District starts?
Just about Renko Loop.
Oh, really? Okay.
Just on the other side of Renko Loop.
So this side of Laclede, then. Laclede is within the West Bonner District.
Yep.
And how many students about is that?
We have about 970 students right now.
In what? How many schools?
Five schools. Okay. We're unique because we're spread out. So we have five school sites. We have three elementary schools, one junior high, and one high school.
Okay. And this was actually at one time part of the whole Bonner County School District. And I don't 20 years ago, or how long has the district been split off from the
I believe it
district?
Was in 99 is in when 99. The district split.
Okay. Yeah. It's just about 20 years ago. So tell us what it's a $3 million per year levy for 2 years, and this needs to be approved by voters with a simple majority. Again, the election is May 21st, and everybody votes at their usual polling place, where you would have voted in the last general election. The polls are open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. There is early voting available at the Bonner County Elections Office here in Sandpoint as well, right? I'm quite sure of that. I checked that fact out. Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell us what the levy is going to support?
So the levy is, the proposal is the same as it was the last levy, so $3 million per year for 2 years. What we're asking for is a large chunk of it's going towards our general fund shortfall, which I'll circle back to. It covers class fees, our school resource officer, technology supplies, all of our library and school funds, classroom funds, I should say, curriculum, tuition credit payments for teachers' professional development, longevity stipends for all of our long-term employees, student activities, which would be everything, co-curricular, extracurricular, band, choir, athletics, facilities, and a bus purchase. Our general fund shortfall covers all of the unfunded mandates from the state, I like to say. So unfunded salaries and benefits, unfunded transportation reimbursements, special education contracts, all of our copier leases, software programming, utilities, all of that would be captured in our general fund shortfall.
And how much is the annual budget? How big a percentage of the annual budget is this?
This is 25% of our budget, and it's been, you know, historically speaking, over 20% of our budget for the past 8 years.
So pretty big chunk of the budget here. If this were not to pass, what would happen?
It would have a substantial impact. I'm not sure exactly what that would look like. It would be a board decision. But basically, we would be forced to cut $3 million from our levy. So however the trustees saw fit to do that.
So, I mean, we would surmise that there'd be some layoffs of teachers and other staff.
Absolutely.
That would be required, since that's personnel is a big part of the budget, I assume.
Personnel. Yeah. Yep. And it would be safe to assume that all of the things the levy specifically discloses wouldn't be covered anymore.
Mm-hmm. This levy was on the March ballot. Am I correct?
Correct.
And it didn't pass. What was the percentage of that vote that, you know, for and against? Do you remember? Do you know?
It was about.
Was it close?
It was close. It was close. I would say our no votes were historically what they've always been. We just seem to have less people out to vote. We only had about 20% voter turnout, which is really low.
Okay.
And your hope now is that you would be able to, this would pass in this May levy vote.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You know, we find that we believe that we're fiscally responsible, and we're going out with the same request we've gone out for several years in a row. We haven't increased it at all. Actually, it's going to be a decrease to our taxers. Our supplemental levy rate was $1.76 last time we ran our levy, And we've sold some Priest Lake properties, which created our market value to go up. So we're looking at $1.47 now for our taxable rate, which is actually the lowest in our region. So the cost of the taxpayer is going down quite a bit for somebody that owns a home for valued at $250,000. They'd be looking at just $1,838 a month, $18.38 a month.
And that's not an increase because it's already being paid from the previous levies.
Right now they're paying $22 a month.
So it's a decrease.
It's a decrease.
So this is not a new tax. It's actually an existing tax that is going to go down if the levy passes.
Correct.
Yeah. So how about a homeowner that, I'm just looking at some stats here, homeowner who has a $150,000 house or house is assessed at that valuation, per month has been $11 cost. It's going to drop to $9.19. So it's a pretty fair decrease in the current levy rate or the current levy amount that the individual homeowners have to pay. So what do you attribute the loss to of the levy in March?
You know, I think it's a combination of things. We did ask for a permanent levy. So basically what the taxpayers saw were two questions. It was, you know, number one, do you approve $3 million per year for 2 years? And then number two, would you support that becoming a permanent levy? A permanent levy would allow us to get the $3 million per year every year indefinitely. The Board of Trustees would have the right to decrease it, but they wouldn't have the grounds to increase it ever. And, you know, there was a lot of confusion with that. There was, I heard a lot of feedback that some people felt that selecting yes to question one, do they support the levy of $3 million, was giving permission to make it permanent. So there was people that if they didn't want it permanent, they were just voting no across the board. Right. Like I said, we only had 20% voter turnout. It was a terrible winter storm that day. So we're just hoping to encourage our, you know, maybe some complacent voters to get out there and...
Bigger. And you weren't in here last time, so I'm guessing there's a bigger push to get information out this time.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Who gets to vote on this issue, this ballot issue?
Everybody within our school district bounds.
Okay.
Every registered voter within the school district boundaries. And if you're not registered, you can register at the polls on election day. You have to bring proof of residency and ID to do so.
And you mentioned the last one in March had that extra question about making it permanent. Does this one also have that question attached?
No, we've taken that option off. We felt pretty strongly that our voters did not support it becoming permanent. And so, you know, we're trying to hear them and we're going back out for the same levy request. The money we need is still the same, just removing that permanency. And we will continue to ask our voters, you know, we have the privilege of asking our voters every 2 years of how important education mm-hmm. is to them and their school systems.
I'm curious how, since you had two questions on the ballot last time, was there a big difference in the yes and no votes between those two?
Yes, I don't remember the exact percentage, yeah. but we lost the permanency by something over 70% or something. It was substantial.
Right. Okay. So that was definitely a motivating factor for people that turned out to vote. And as you suggest, maybe some of those people said, well, got confused about the second question on this current supplemental levy that you're asking them to approve.
Mm-hmm. One significant thing you already mentioned, but I think if you currently own a home and are paying for a levy costs every month, if it's $159,000, it's currently $11 a month, it will go down. Everyone likes a deal, right?
Yes, it will go down. Yes.
So just to mention that again.
And as you also mentioned, that it's one of the lowest rates in the region for sure. Lake Pendre School District's a little higher. It's $1.66 per $1,000 of assessed valuation. Lakeland is substantially higher. It's $2.85. So,
I believe those amounts have actually gone up a little bit with their approved increased
with the one that just passed
that
for both
just
of those
passed in
districts.
March.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, what else do you want to tell us that's important for voters to know about this budget, this levy question that'll be on the ballot on Tuesday?
you know, just to get ahead of the misinformation, if you have any questions or concerns, you know, our office is always open. You can reach the superintendent, Paul Anselmo, or myself, the business manager and board clerk, both at telephone number 448-4439. We welcome all questions. You can visit our district website, sd83.org. And just, you know, get all the facts before you make your decision. That's what we'd encourage our voters to do.
I'm going to say that phone number once again, because people do have questions and they can call. I'm sure the phone gets answered. It's 208-448-4439. If you are in the West Side Bonner County School District 83 and you have questions about this upcoming levy vote, that give a call. I'm sure they can. You can answer the questions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And there, and as Chris, you said, there's early voting up to the 17th here at the election office, mm-hmm. and the election day is the 21st, next Tuesday.
Yep, get out and vote.
Yeah, and the polls are open 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. just like any regular election. This election has really been flying under the radar. I feel there has not been much discussion about it, and it's. Hopefully people will take just the few minutes it takes to get out and vote. Jennifer, anything else you'd like to tell us about the levy election? Well, how about we do have a few minutes left. Tell us about the student achievement level within the district. How are kids doing?
Our student achievement level is on a continuous increase, along with our graduation rates. We're just right about state average right now, so we continue to strive for greatness over there at West Bonner County. We offer all-day kindergarten. And, you know, we're proud of the, you know, exceptional staff that we have, and maintaining those teachers is really important to us. You know, being a boundary school, meaning right next to Washington, is, you know, something that we continue to struggle with. But, you know, with this proposed levy, we are, you know, looking at increasing our classified salary schedule, our teaching salary schedule, along with the longevity stipends to recognize those long-term employees.
How big of an impact do you feel it is to be right adjacent to the Washington state line, where somebody could live in Priest River and drive for 10 minutes and be in a school district that's paying a good amount more to their teachers?
Yeah, I believe it has a substantial impact. And, you know, that's really one of the flaws that we've seen so far with the career ladder, is that, you know, it's put a lot of money into those beginning teachers, which is great. But what we're seeing is that we're getting them here and we're getting them trained and they're moving on, because we're not able to put enough money into the salary schedule.
So as they gain tenure and experience, they start looking for districts that might pay better.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's probably a problem throughout Idaho, but being right on the border, that's got to be exacerbated for your district.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else you want to tell us? We're just we have just a couple minutes. How about extracurricular activities? What sorts of extracurricular activities does the supplemental levy support?
The supplemental levy supports all extracurricular and co-curricular. So we have Academica, we have leadership at the high school, we have all of our athletics, obviously, band, choir. We have a variety of clubs at the high school.
Okay.
Looks like Sandra.
Okay, well, we just got joined by Sandra Brower. She's the board chair for the West Bonner County School District. Sandra, I hope you're okay.
I'm okay.
Okay.
It's an accident.
A mishap on your way in.
A mishap. Yeah. Okay. The lady in front of me, unfortunately, was lost and put it in reverse.
Oh, no.
It was sad.
Going the wrong direction. For her.
But you made it here, and we really appreciate your efforts.
So sorry.
That's okay.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Yeah, Jennifer absolutely. Has been telling us all about the upcoming vote on the levy, and I know you're the board chair.
I am.
And so, again, we could just hear from you of what the board is looking at when they redid this levy vote from March to May. I know they took off the question about making it permanent, and what it means to the district.
Well, unfortunately, most districts in the state of Idaho are having the same funding problems that we're having, and we require local funding to we require local funding to meet our budgetary needs and to provide the same curriculum and the same extracurriculum activities and teacher salaries and our resource officer. All of that is based on local funding. So we have to have this levy to bridge the gap between state and local funding.
As all school districts in Idaho have to do.
Like 81%.
Have supplemental levies. Yeah. I mean, the way that the funding structure is built, it's almost a necessity for local school districts.
And we're not the only, I mean, I think there's only 4 states out of 50 that don't run levies. So this isn't a Idaho problem. This is a United States problem. And Idaho, unfortunately, is one of the lowest states that per pupil funding. The only state that spends less on their students is Utah. Mm-hmm. So do we really want to be the lowest? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think our students deserve better, and we need to, unfortunately, lobby for that. And having a levy is not a bad thing. I mean, if you think about it, that money is under local control now. Back before 2006, we raised the state, you know, taxed our homeowners and our property owners at $3 per thousand. All that money went to Boise, and then Boise divided up how they saw fit. Now we have a little bit more control. We're still getting money from Boise. Granted, it's not enough. The legislatures are not doing their job. They're not paying their bills. So we're forced to run a levy, but it's controlled by our local government. So all the tax dollars that we raise, our constituents know exactly where that money is going. It's going right back in the community. The property tax that we're collecting is spent right in our own community, spent on our students. So that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's important also to touch on the fact that when folks are listening to the legislation, they're hearing a 6.5% increase at the state level, and they're asking us why they're not seeing our levy decrease. You know, one of the biggest things is that the amount of discretionary money or money to spend on our discretion, at our discretion, is limited. You know, there's, I think, 31 or 32 line items that tells us where to spend our money. So while the state does pay for great programs that benefit our students, it's not necessarily supporting these needs that we're asking for on the levy.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you touched on the unmandated expenses. Our levy is for also to meet that mandated, unfunded programs that the state requires us. The money they require us to spend, they're not providing. So I don't know if you guys talked about the lottery. You already did.
No, not that.
So, you know, lottery money is huge, and people want to know how much we're getting. And I think last year or this year, we got $67,000. That lottery can only be spent on maintenance of our buildings. And then the state comes back in and requires us to spend $370,000. But they're not giving us the money they're requiring us to spend.
I'm curious about the lottery funds, because the state does raise a lot of money from the lottery, and it is supposedly designated for education. But how are they deciding how to allocate that out around the state?
That's a really good question. I don't know the answer to that. All I know is that we get a very, very small portion of those lottery dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most of the state funding in some variation is dependent on our student attendance, which is unfortunate in itself as well. You know, we're not necessarily paid for every child that's there. We're paid for every child that's there on a certain day.
Mm-hmm. And you do have probably a good homeschooler population within the district.
Mm-hmm.
So when those kids don't attend school, then it actually detracts from the amount of money that the district can receive from the state, right?
Right. They would need to be in our school for a minimum of 4 hours a day for us to receive any funding at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we talked about how much more expensive it is to fund a rural school versus a school in a more dense populated area, mm-hmm. like Coeur d'Alene or Boise.
Mm-hmm.
So our funding dollars are spread wider. So we have more transportation costs. We have more building costs. We have more buildings because our students live further out. So I hear a lot that, well, our our maybe our student population has decreased, so therefore our need for funding should decrease. But that's not the case. We still have to provide those buildings. We still have to put a teacher in front of those students. They still require the same opportunities, or they should, even though their class size might be smaller. So unfortunately, it costs more money to have a rural school district than it does in a more dense populated area.
And there are inequities statewide between the amount of funding these districts get, because a school district like Meridian or some of the districts in Boise with the denser population, they actually have more funding.
They
that
do.
Are coming to them. Yeah,
that's right. And their expenditures are lower.
Yes. Right.
So we're hurting.
Yeah.
Why it's so important that we have this levy.
When you have kids in school and you're going to some of these different schools, you can see that our infrastructure here isn't at par with some of the other
that's
districts
right.
that are up there.
I know that the legislature in Boise has been looking at a funding formula change, but it didn't get very far in this last legislative session. So we'll see if that gives a little relief to some of the rural school districts, as you're talking about.
The last iteration I saw of that, we were actually just probably losing about $40,000 from what we get right now. So I'm not expecting...
Going the wrong direction.
They like to say down there that, you know, that they're, they're fixing the plumbing, but not necessarily increasing the water pressure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I would like to see a funding formula that actually put more dollars. We do need a change in how they fund, but we also need an increase in funding. Otherwise, we're just changing the problem.
Yes, exactly. Because a large portion of this, the revenues raised in the state does go to education. Mm-hmm. But it's becoming apparent there's more need for more revenue.
Right.
To be
we need
put
to
into
collect
education.
More revenue.
Well, we're really glad that you made it
Thank
here.
Thank you so much.
And that the work Sandra Brower and Jennifer. No, I'm not getting that right.
Jennifer
Anselmo.
Yeah.
Anselmo.
Yeah. But really, don't get a chance often to say thank you for the hard work you're doing on behalf of the children in our communities, because it is sitting on the board. It's just a lot of paperwork and trying to make things work, and also balancing budgets and things like that. So thank you. And the vote is May 21st, early voting up till Friday the 17th at the county voting office. And there you go. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. Thank you for giving us the platform, and really, really appreciate it. And to my husband, if you heard us in a car accident, I'm sorry. And old platypus.
That's okay.
Well, you're in good shape, though. You got through the accident.
She's
just fine.
Okay.
So just, you know, check out our website at sd83.org. If you have any further questions, you can find my contact information there, as well as Superintendent Anselmo's contact information.
And go ahead, that phone number again.
208-448-4439.
And that's about it. We're out of time, folks, and I'm glad
Thank
that you,
you
made it here.
Thank you.
And we're going to go out with one of my favorite songs. And three of my favorite women singers, Dolly Parton, Linda Ronstadt, and Emmylou Harris. This is Do I Ever Cross Your Mind. Have a beautiful day.
Bye now.